Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Back in your life on this Wednesday, September 18th, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome to a brand new episode of the MMA Reporters. I am in New York City. I'm very excited about today's episode. We've got a lot to discuss with some very interesting people. As always, as I like to say, a lot going on in the world of mixed martial arts. And I was telling TST before we went on the air, that's Tight Ship Troy for the new fans out there, I really enjoy this Wednesday show. I'm starting to really look forward to it. I like talking to the different voices covering the sport, different voices in media. I appreciate everyone who continues to listen and subscribe to the channel. I appreciate all the feedback, and I enjoy the challenge of finding new angles, new things to talk about, and not the same old stuff, because on Monday we get down to the nitty-gritty. On Wednesdays with Chael, Ariel and the Bad Guy, which is on ESPN Plus, which we just taped, and you can find it later on today on ESPN Plus, the fastest growing show on ESPN Plus. We're essentially the show that built that platform with our own two hands, built off our shoulders. You know the story. Anyway, I enjoy those things for what they are, but in this particular case, on Wednesday, MMA Reporters, I really enjoy talking to the different voices in MMA media. So today on the program, it's going to be a very eclectic mix of voices. Later in the show, we're going to talk to James Wilkes. If you're a longtime MMA fan, you may be familiar with James Wilkes. That's a name that might ring a bell. James Wilkes won the 9th season of the Ultimate Fighter welterweight tournament. It was the USA versus UK show, which had Michael Bisping and Dan Henderson as head coaches. He beat DeMarcus Johnson in the finale. Had a nice little career, unfortunately had to retire rather abruptly. Well, he just produced a documentary that came out earlier this week called The Game Changers, and it's about plant-based diets. It's about how athletes have converted from meat eating to a strict plant-based diet, and it's about how it's actually beneficial to do that and how it's a detriment to eat meat if you're a high-level athlete. In fact, there's a lot of MMA connections in the documentary, but he's the star of the documentary. He's the host, so to speak. It's all through his eyes and ears. He's the narrator, and he does a great job with it. And I had no idea that he had kind of transitioned to this world and had done something like this. So I'm really looking forward to talking to him about that and to learning more about the documentary. And by the way, there's some really impressive people who are behind it, executive producers. Some of the names: Arnold Schwarzenegger, James Cameron, Novak Djokovic, Chris Paul, Lewis Hamilton. I mean, these are heavy hitters. Who's who? So that'll be back into the show. We'll talk to producer James Wilkes about making this documentary. Middle of the show, we'll talk to New York Rick about some things going on in the world of mixed martial arts. He's got some hot takes. It's been a while since we had New York Rick on the program, so I'm looking forward to that. But first, let's go all the way to Mexico City and say hello to an old friend of mine. It's been a while since I talked to this man. Of course, the UFC is back in Mexico City this Saturday night. It's on ESPN Plus, 8 p.m. Eastern start time as far as the main card is concerned. And the main event is Jeremy Stephens against Yair El Pantera Rodriguez. His first fight back since that amazing knockout against the Korean Zombie. His first time headlining a show for the UFC in Mexico. This is a very big deal. And who other than my old pal Danny Segura is here to help make sense of it all and break down the Latin America market. He knows it better than anyone else out there, and it's been a while since I talked to him, so I'm happy to have him on the show. My old hermano, Danny Segura, on the program making his debut. Danny, how are you?
Estoy bien, Ariel. ¿Cómo estás?
Muy bien. Un poquito, you know, más o menos. But it's good to talk to you, my man.
You went from very well, a bit to so-so.
Yes, that's usually my mood. It's great to talk to you again, my man. You're doing great work, as always. And I understand two things I understand. A, it was your birthday yesterday. True or false?
That's right. Very true.
Happy birthday. And B,
thank you.
You're in Mexico City right now, correct?
Yes, I'm in Mexico City.
All right. So what is it like? Tell us the scene. Paint the picture for us. Yair making his return, getting a chance to headline. What's the buzz like? I don't know if this is quite, and you tell me if I'm wrong, Cain Velasquez fighting on pay-per-view there, but how big of a deal is Yair fighting back home in Mexico and especially headlining this card?
I mean, it's certainly a big deal, and it speaks volumes to how far the development of MMA has gone in here in Mexico. I mean, we talk about this upcoming card on Saturday. Every single bout in the main card involves a Mexican fighter. You know, when the UFC first held it, you know, their first event here in Mexico, it was UFC 180, Werdum versus Mark Hunt. Only one Mexican fighter was in the main card. So it speaks volumes to how far, you know, MMA has gone in Mexico. But nonetheless, you know, it still has a long way to go. You know, the MMA still very much, you know, in its infancy stages here, but it still has made a great deal of progress. And certainly Yair Rodriguez headlining this card is, you know, it's a testament to that.
So I think that Yair is the most famous, most decorated Mexican-born fighter in UFC history because, of course, Cain, not trying to knock him, but wasn't born in Mexico, Mexican-American.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that statement? And how popular is he? Because he hasn't been very active over the last couple of years. How popular is he? Like, when he goes on the street there, do people know him? Do they flock to him?
That would be – so I can't really speak much on that, but he's certainly somebody that you know, people recognize. I mean, he was recently on Fox Deportes, and certainly people know – you know, who he is as far as, you know, being in the space of MMA, but I wouldn't go as far as saying, like, you know, he's a superstar or anything like that. For example, if you go to, like, ESPN.com, .mx, you know, the ESPN here in Mexico City, and you just take a look at the coverage, it's still, for example, like, Alexa Grasso talking about, like, the cauliflower ears, and, you know, it's still very much like that. So, so yeah, but nonetheless, like, the fans here in Mexico, yeah, they know who Yair is, and he is by far the most famous Mexican-born fighter that we've ever seen. I mean, you can make a case for Diablito. You know, he's had a very successful UFC career, but he has not created the same amount of buzz that Yair has. I mean, Yair has headline cards, you know, something Diablito can't say.
Okay, so from what I understand, you spoke to Yair yesterday. That interview is up right now on MMAfighting.com. What's the vibe that you get from him right now? Because he's always been, you know, he had the drama with the UFC last year where he was abruptly released from the company, comes back, gets the opportunity against the Korean Zombie. Of course, we know what happened against Frankie Edgar and how everything went off the rails. What kind of sense do you get from him right now? Where is he at going into this fight?
Yeah, so this is the first time I actually interview him in person.
Okay.
I talked to him over the phone and, you know, I've seen obviously other build-ups that he's had, you know, four fights. I've, you know, I look at a lot of his coverage in Spanish as well. And there's something kind of weird about him, and weird in a good way. Like, he's in a very, very good spot mentally. And in the interview, when I spoke to him, he kind of touched on that several times throughout the interview. And he just seems very zen. And throughout the interview, often he dropped how he meditates on things. And you know, he learned how to deal with the loss against Frankie Edgar. That really hurt him, and that was his first professional loss, his only professional loss. And obviously the things with the UFC, but he seems to be at a very, very good place right now mentally. And, yeah, I'm just excited to see how far that's going to take him in his MMA career because we know he has the skills. We know he has the looks, right? But I feel like the mental part has been an issue for him in the past, and I feel like that might be behind him. I mean, all signs point that, you know, he's at a very, very good place right now. So, yeah, very, very interesting demeanor. Very zen.
He has bounced around as far as his training is concerned. Like, for a while he was at Jackson, then he was in Chicago. He's moved around. Do you know where he's at right now? Because I feel like that is a telling sign as well. Like, someone who continues to bounce around and can't find a home, to me, that's a warning sign. That's someone who's not 100%, you know, in tune with what's going on, 100% focused, is allowing distractions to take him here or there. Where is he at right now as far as his training? Did he talk about that?
No, he didn't speak much about that, but I know he's in the States. I know he's in California. He did some training also here in Mexico to get acclimated to you know, Mexico City and obviously the altitude. We are, I think it's, you know, over 7,000 feet above sea level. And I don't know exactly what camp he's with. I know, yeah, he's bounced around a lot, but you know, that also works for some guys, you know, kind of being a nomad and just bouncing around. So yeah.
Do you feel like he's officially over the Frankie Edgar stuff and the drama of last year? Because he's only had one fight since that loss, and it really seemed to mess him up. And then, of course, the Zabit stuff, and it seemed to me like he wanted to fight Zabit on this card, and they didn't want to make it happen, and then he ends up with Jeremy Stephens. But do you feel like he is drama-free at this point, or still has a bit of a, you know, a chip on his shoulder and has something to prove coming off those last 2 years?
He obviously has something to prove because, you know, don't get me wrong, the fight against Korean Zombie was spectacular, but again, that was only one fight. I feel like he needs to build a couple of fights and put a little bit of a streak together in order to kind of prove that he's back and he's past all that. So I guess we'll only find out past Saturday, but I really do think he is. Just talking to him, his demeanor is a demeanor that I've never seen before, and he seems to be mentally at a very, very good spot right now. And as far as the drama, I mean, he even said he's cut back on social media. Like, if you look at his Twitter, the only thing that goes on his Twitter are links from, you know, that get shared through Instagram. So he's obviously cut that because we know that got him into hot water, tweeting the fake news stuff.
Yeah.
He's obviously headlining a card right now, and he's being promoted heavily. So, you know, the UFC is not going to push someone that they don't like. So all signs from the outside looking in look like everything has been settled and is drama-free. And look, I even talked to him about Zabit, who, you know, he got a lot of heat from the Zabit matchup, right, because it never came to fruition. A lot of people thought he was running. You know, was it made? Was it not? You know, there was a lot of things surrounding it and a lot of drama. He admitted that. But he said, look, me and Zabit are going to fight. I do believe our paths are going to cross at some point. So, yeah, he's a very good spot right now, and I feel like all that drama is behind him.
So Jeremy is an interesting player in this story as well, in my opinion. He's been in Mexico for the past 6 or so weeks, so he's very aware of what it's like fighting in Mexico. He has experienced it. He's got Mexican ties as well. His wife is from Mexico, and some of his family is from Mexico as well, so this feels like a personal fight for him too. And look, he's coming off of two straight losses, Aldo and Zabit. I thought he fought Zabit very tough. I thought he impressed a lot of people. I thought a lot of people were looking past him thinking that Zabit would run through him, and that didn't happen. And Zabit is almost the perfect guy to prepare for Yair. Zabit has a very similar style to Yair. So I feel like people are sort of viewing, look, the odds makers have it pretty much as a pick 'em, and Jeremy's like the classic litmus test kind of guy. I think that the term gatekeeper has a negative connotation to it. I like the term litmus test. Like, okay, if you could get by Jeremy Stephens, all right, we know where you're at. You can now go on your way. But I wouldn't, like, I don't think this is a gimme fight for Yair at all, and I want to get your take on it. Like, Jeremy is super tough. He always comes prepared. He is very fired up. And I feel like the fact that he just came off a fight against Zabit is a very big plus in his favor because he's now going to fight a similar fighter in Yair.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and I do agree with you that gatekeeper has a negative connotation. And in a way, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, gatekeeper should be celebrated, but a litmus test is a good name because I'm going to read you the last, you know, five losses that Jeremy Stephens has had. Zabit Magomedsharipov, Jose Aldo, Renato Moicano, Frank Yeager, Max Holloway. What do all those guys have in common? They're legit. Like,
yeah.
People that get past Jeremy Stephens are legit, are world-class fighters. So, yeah, this is a perfect test for Yair Rodriguez, and also, you know, a big storyline that plagued his career was a lot of people thought he was rushed when he fought Frankie Edgar, right? So I do think, although he's complained about the level of opponent he's getting here at Mexico City, I do believe this is a good fight. I mean, he just came off a war against the Korean Zombie. I know, you know, Jeremy Stephens is very tough, but nonetheless, it's a good matchup for him. And another little storyline that a lot of people are not talking about, and I think it's been swept under the rug, is that, yes, Jeremy Stephens has been training here in Mexico, has been prepping in high altitude, right? He's done his homework, but he's also been training with El Teco Quiñones and Macio Fujin. Teco, obviously, you know, in the UFC, he's fighting this Saturday. Macio no longer in the UFC, but, you know, he's still an active fighter. Both guys share the tough house with Yair Rodriguez. They know each other. Like, they follow each other on Instagram. They've trained together. They came up through the regional circuit here in Mexico City. They know Yair very, very, very well. And Jeremy Stephens has been training with them for the past few weeks. So, you know, you start wondering what are the things that maybe Jeremy Stephens is picking up here, right?
Yeah.
So very, very interesting stuff. I do think it's a very dangerous fight for Yair. I mean, Jeremy Stephens is a dangerous opponent for anybody. But nonetheless, I do think it's the right fight for him, although, you know, he's complained about wanting, you know, a higher ranked opposition.
So you have your finger on the Latin American pulse better than anyone covering the sport right now. Are there a couple names, two, three, one, that you're excited about seeing in action on Saturday? I mean, we know about Alexa Grasso, and we know about Brandon Moreno, and we know about Irene Aldana, but are there other names that are maybe lower on the card that we should really look out for?
Oh, yeah, I think there are some very, very good names on this card. For example, I don't know if you guys remember, first of all, this is Brandon Moreno's first fight back. He was cut. He was part of the flyweight purge. He gets cut. He leaves, goes, wins a title at LFA, I believe. Now he's back. You know, so that's a great story within itself. But for example, Martin Bravo is a guy that I feel like, you know, he's only 25 years old. He won the second season of the Ultimate Fight, the third season of the Ultimate Fighter Latin America. People were regarding him as the next big thing. In his, you know, he takes a short notice fight against Humberto Vendane, gets knocked out in just seconds, then goes to a split decision, suffers a split decision loss to Alex Cáceres. I feel like he hasn't really been able to take off, but once he takes off, he's going to be a problem because he's got really good boxing, he's got power, he's tough, he's young, he's just your classic Mexican fighter. And I feel like as soon as he takes off, he's going to do big things. Also on that card, Claudio Puelles, I don't know if you guys remember, I think it was in Chile or Argentina, he had a crazy comeback, a knee bar finish where he got beat up for, you know, three rounds, and then he pulls off this crazy comeback. He's also really good. He was regarded as a very, very technical guy, and some of his issues were, you know, mentally, like he wasn't always there. But nonetheless, I feel like he gets that, you know, tuned in, and all of a sudden he becomes a killer. Also, El Teco Quiñones, I think he, you know, he's one of the most charismatic guys right now in the sort of Latin scene. I don't know if you guys remember, he was scheduled to fight Sean O'Malley. You know, that's another great story. He trained Jeremy Stevens. He's a very, very good fighter. Again, another guy that if he just gets, you know, the right amount of push, I feel like he could be quite big. So, yeah, some interesting names in this card.
I'm really looking forward to the return of Alexa Grasso. I thought that she looked the best that she's ever looked in the UFC in her last fight, her win over Karolina Kovalevich. And I would admit that, you know, I had high hopes for her coming out of Invicta. I think everyone was really excited. Wow, you've got this Mexican female fighter. We haven't seen a lot of these coming out of Invicta. And her career started very impressively. She was undefeated for quite some time, started her career 9-0. Before losing to Felice Herrig. And then since then, it's been kind of up and down. What do you think her ceiling is? And she's fighting a very tough fighter, former champion at 115, Carla Esparza, who's kind of another sort of litmus test type of fighter in her respective weight class. What do you think her ceiling is? Like, do you think we've seen the best of Alexa Grasso, or do you think she can get better than this?
Yeah, I think she can get better. I mean, she's only 26.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind. She's training out of Lower Gym, which is a very, very good gym. That gym, especially for females. You know, Irene Aldana trains there. They have a couple of really good Invicta fighters as well. Bellator's Alejandra Lara also trains there. They have a really good gym going on there in Guadalajara for female fighters. And look, I was super impressed in her last fight against Karolina Kowalkiewicz, another fighter that's, you know, only the very best get past her. So I think she's just getting better. I think, you know, this is also a good test. We saw her lose against Tatiana Suarez, right? And that kind of opened up some, we saw some holes in her game, right? Which was the wrestling, the grappling. Well, those questions are going to get, you know, brought up again because Carla Esparza, we know she's a very good wrestler. In fact, before Tatiana Suarez came even in the scene, Carla Esparza was regarded as the best wrestler in that division. So, again, another tough test. I wish the UFC took a little bit of a lighter approach with her because I feel like she's very good. She's still raw. She's still developing. But look, you know, she's in the UFC. You know, we know that in the UFC you can't get any easy fights. So, you know, she's getting a tough matchup here on Saturday. But I do think we haven't seen the best of Alexa Grasso, and the best is yet to come.
By the way, how would you rate the current state of the Latin America scene right now? Like, do you feel like there's a good development going on? You mentioned how, you know, the first show only had one Mexican fighter on the main card, and it seems like it's come a long way. But again, since you're so in tune with what's going on, do you like the way it's progressing right now? Do you feel like there's a good influx of talent that's coming along?
Yes and no. In some areas, I feel like there's been a lot of progress, and I feel like in some other areas, there's been a little bit of regression. You know, just the UFC alone, going to Chile, going to Uruguay, going to Argentina, all this is good for the countries, right? Because, you know, a lot of local fighters are getting shots. Also, you know, fighters are getting to fight in their home countries and get that exposure as well and make that a big deal, right? So in that way, I feel like there's been a lot of progression. Also, you know, they're just revisiting in Mexico. The UFC is making, I believe, a PI in Mexico City as well. All that is good news. But what happened to the Ultimate Fighter in Latin America? There was three seasons, and that's all there's been. And I haven't heard of a fourth one. And that was huge. I mean, look who's fighting in the main card. Look who's headlining this card. Look who we're talking about now, Jair Rodriguez. He was a product of what? The Ultimate Fighter Latin America. And I know the Ultimate Fighter Latin America in the U.S. gets a bad rep because, you know, it's been so overplayed. It's gone for so long. But in the Latin scene, it has created so many stars. I mean, Enrique Barzola also won that in you know, he's done great in the UFC. I mean, there's so many fighters that have come out of the Ultimate Fighter Latin America. I mean, Chito Vera. I mean, the list goes on, right?
Yeah.
That created stars. And I'd like to see more of that because I do believe that it served a special purpose. And I do believe that it is very needed.
It's a great point because I think that it reached its ceiling here in America, the Ultimate Fighter. But in those regions, there's very much a need for it to develop new talent, to find new talent, diamonds in the rough. You know, people who may not be quite ready for the big show, but this is a way to introduce them and get them in your system. So, yeah, I never really thought of it from that perspective, but America has the well is very much dry. But in those regions, it's a great point and maybe something that they should revisit. Danny, this has been great stuff, man. As always, you are very much in tune with what's going on. Great to talk to you again. Keep up the great work in Mexico right now. You're doing great stuff over there. And also, of course, in your day-to-day stuff at MMAfighting.com. All the best, my man. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you for doing this.
All right. Thank you so much, Eric.
All right. Feliz cumpleaños. I think I said that right to Danny Segura, one of my old friends from the MMAfighting.com days, doing great work over there for the site that I used to work for and right now in Mexico City. So I suggest you check him out. It's at Danny Segura TV on Twitter. All right, let's move along before we say hello to our next guest, and we have a lot to talk to him about. Let me tell you about our good friends over at Vivid Seats. I love Vivid Seats. I've told you this about them. They're very good people. They supported my first roadshow, and I'm the kind of guy who remembers those sorts of things. You know, like if you support me, my humble beginnings, I will always remember you. I will always be loyal to you. And so they were there. They were the title sponsor. And so I love these guys. And I will always be in their corner. And they're always in our corner. If you're a sports fan, look, I know MMA fans are big time fans of MMA. Obviously, you're an MMA fan. And a lot of you may just be MMA fans. But there's a lot of you who are also football fans. I know this because you have all kinds of hot takes. I see them on your Twitter feeds, in the comments, filling up my DM. You all want to talk about football. You all love football. You all want to watch football. And so listen up. Vivid Seats is offering ESPN fans 10% off football tickets right now. But you got to act fast. Head to vividseats.com and enter the promo code ESPN at the checkout to receive 10% off your first order. Vivid Seats is the official ticket partner of ESPN, my home. And with their 100% buyer guarantee, there's no reason to miss a game this year. That's it. Don't go to anyone else. Vivid Seats, that's your place. I support them. They support me. It's a good little partnership. Don't wait. The offer ends very soon. So head to vividseats.com right now. Get off the couch. Go to the games. Get into the action. Your team needs you. Buffalo Bills, 2-0. Where are you at? They need me. Your team needs you. Go to Vivid Seats. Support them because they support us. All right, let's move along. Say hello to our next guest. He has been dodging us for quite some time. He's been very busy. I think it's been a month or so since he's been on the program. Each week I asked him to come on. He says, I'm too busy. I noticed an update, finally, 10 months later, on the Twitter bio. I'll let you go read it for yourself. But we have finally located the often imitated, never duplicated New York Rick. Are you there?
I am here, Ariel.
How are you? Long time.
Once, I am not too busy to join you.
Thank you.
But yes, I mean, look, life has gotten busier since getting beamed up to the mothership.
You know? Yeah.
It is no small task.
I noticed the subtle change in the bio.
Yeah, you know,
in the middle of the night.
I may have even dug in on the LinkedIn and the Facebook page.
After you were called out by that one guy?
After I was called out by that one guy named Ariel Helwani.
Oh, that's right. But the one guy on Twitter noticed the LinkedIn.
Yes, he did. And you retweeted it for the world. And so I thought it was probably appropriate.
Wow, look at that. Okay, so we won't say. We'll just say go check it out for yourself.
Find out.
If you care. It's good to talk to you again. And let's
let's just get right to it. You told me you have hot takes. You've got something that you need to get off your chest. True or false?
I think that's true, but I don't even remember what it was. Gosh. I have so many hot takes.
This guy is
Tee me up. Tee me up.
Rusty. Don't tell Dominic Cruz about this cage rust that we're witnessing right now.
Tee me up.
You called me Monday night and you said,
yep,
verbatim, Justin Gaethje is the worst opponent for Conor McGregor. Yes. You said that.
Fully believe that. And you'll note today, actually.
Some kind of hot take. You don't even remember it 2 days later.
Funnily, and I have so many, Ariel. Yes. I have so many hot takes. I'm glad you gave me an open microphone. I'm ready for this. Funnily enough, notice how Conor McGregor posted a photo of Dustin Poirier and continues to kind of go to that well.
Yeah.
Dustin responding in kind, or not in kind. He's being much more respectful, essentially saying, yeah, give me this fight. I want this fight. Conor McGregor does not seem to be addressing, acknowledging, giving any credence to Justin Gaethje. Mm-hmm. Now, a lesser man than myself might say, well, is Conor quote-unquote scared in MMA Twitter terms? Is Conor quote-unquote scared of Justin Gaethje? To which I would say no. Of course he's not scared.
Good.
But I do think stylistically, and this is my hot take, I've seen it floated that Justin Gaethje would be a good stylistic matchup for Conor McGregor now, whether you fall on that side of the argument or somewhere else is personal preference. But I would counter and argue that Justin Gaethje is probably, the Justin Gaethje that we saw fight Cowboy is probably not a good matchup for Conor McGregor. Now,
why?
I think he's going to be able to take his shot. And if Conor can't melt him in the first round and a half, Justin Gaethje is a guy that you know will be there for all three or five rounds. This is a Conor McGregor fight. For all five rounds.
Right.
And he will be dangerous, and he will continue to come forward. That is a pressure that many men have wilted under, and I think that is a bad style matchup for Conor McGregor. I think that if he doesn't end it quickly, it's going to be a very long night, and we could potentially see Justin Gaethje just overwhelm him. And that is how I think that matchup would go. Now, I will grant that Khabib Nurmagomedov is not a very good style matchup for Conor McGregor either, and Justin Gaethje seems to be available. But I think a guy like Dustin Poirier is a much better style matchup for Conor McGregor than somebody like Justin Gaethje. I think Justin Gaethje is a nightmare.
All right, so if you're managing Conor, you're steering clear from Gaethje, you're going for Poirier, or do you like someone better than Poirier?
You know who I would go for, and I've said this months ago, and this has been my money fight for Conor, Max Holloway. Go for Max Holloway.
But what about Volkanovski?
Yeah, well, I mean, that has to resolve itself, and I don't think... Do you believe that we will see Conor before the end of the year? I know you mentioned January 2020 as a potential...
There's no pay-per-view in January. There's the December 14th date that's out there, and... He threw out Dublin December 14th.
Sure.
There's nothing going on there.
That's a Vegas card currently.
Yeah, that's a Vegas card. I mean, it wouldn't shock me. I'm not ruling out December 14th. No chance MSG. I think end of the year, early 2020 is our best bet.
Let's say it's early 2020 and Max Holloway is successful in a title defense against Alexander Volkanovski. Max versus Conor makes all the sense in the world to me. Now, I think Dustin versus Conor is a fine fight as well and makes all the sense in the world as well. But I feel that Max Holloway and Conor McGregor is big business. Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor is big business on the strength of Conor, but I don't necessarily know Dustin coming off a loss, having been beaten so quickly by Conor the last time, if that fight has the magnitude of a Holloway versus Conor matchup. That is the matchup that I would be angling for if I was Conor McGregor. I also think it would mean something more significant than a win over Dustin Poirier, who's currently not a champion, whereas Max Holloway is. Now, I wouldn't say that it should happen at 45. I don't think Conor McGregor is interested or really should be getting back down to that weight, but a win over Max Holloway at 55 means something. It's what put Dustin on the map, and I think that there's enough heat there between Conor and Max that would be the fight I'd go for.
So these days, after a fight, there's always this question that's asked, and it's become a little, I don't want to say, it's like this guy's in a 15-minute fight or a 25-minute fight, and you ask him two questions, and then you ask what's next. And it's just very broad, and you don't get a good answer more often than not these days. Sometimes you do. You get, you know, Diaz calling out Masvidal, but a lot of times you don't. Well, what I liked about Daniel Cormier on Saturday was he didn't just say what's next. He asked a very pointed question. This is what he asked Justin Gaethje in the cage Saturday, and this is what Gaethje said.
Every time I walk out here, I I question everything on purpose. I think they're better than me. I think they're working harder than me. I have something to prove to myself every time I step in here, and I will never, never let myself down. Max effort's all I expect from myself. With that, I will be satisfied no matter what.
Justin, what's in the crosshairs? Do you have an Irishman in the crosshairs, or is there a Russian?
The Irishman's retired. I want a real fighter. I want the winner of Tony and Khabib. I want to fight Khabib before he's gone, and if Tony wins, nobody's going to miss that fight. We could put a million people in the stadium.
So a couple of things to say about that. Number one, I think, and this was very tame as far as things that he said about Conor. My impression is the reason why Conor isn't taking the bait with Justin is Justin has made it very personal, right? Like he's talked about fatherhood and he's talked about the kind of husband that he is. And if you notice, historically, Conor hasn't taken that kind of bait. He's taken the kind of bait where it's like, I could beat you up and stuff like that. But I'm starting to get the sense that he's just kind of freezing him out. Him saying that he's retired isn't going, you know, below the belt, but I don't think he has liked the other stuff. That being said, this is the fight that I want to see happen because I feel like it's the perfect fight for both guys. Obviously, Gaethje isn't getting Khabib next. He's not getting Ferguson next. We want those two guys to fight each other. Conor wants a fight to get him back on track to fight the winner of that fight, to fight for the belt. Gaethje deserves a big fight. He's won three fights in a row in the first round, all finishes against, you know, top flight opponents. It's the perfect fight for both guys. And honestly, like I would love to know what the odds makers would say. Gaethje's a really tough fight. Like, I'm not saying it's the perfect fight for Conor because it's a gimme fight. Like, I've heard Conor's really interested in this Frankie Edgar fight. To me, there's not a lot of interest in that. Like, Frankie Edgar's a 135er now. He was last a 145er. I understand the idea of he's been respectful and maybe it's a nice little preview for Khabib. But to me, like, you want to go in there and see where you're at. You fight Justin Gaethje. And if you get by him, you're ready.
I agree that I would like to see Conor and Gaethje. I think it would be a fun fight. But I think Justin Gaethje's in perfect position. It's very rare that you would say somebody other than Conor McGregor is in the driver's seat, but when you're looking at the two, Justin Gaethje's kind of got it made. He could potentially fight Conor McGregor, but is there anybody ahead of him for the title fight? It seems like, really, whichever opportunity comes first, he's almost in perfect position to kind of snatch that up. If Tony and Khabib settle that long awaited rivalry, and then Justin Gaethje waits for winner, it's hard to see anybody ahead of him in that pecking order. And as well, if a Conor McGregor fight materializes sometime early next year or even, you know, late this year, Justin Gaethje's got to be the number one on that list as far as lightweights go. So
I want to see Gaethje Khabib at some point. Like, I'm starting to buy into this idea that he could give Khabib his toughest fight.
I'm not buying that.
He could give, I'm not saying beat him, but considering his wrestling background, which people forget about, considering how tough he is, how powerful he is, it'd be interesting.
I ain't buying anybody against Khabib.
I'm not saying he's going to beat him. I'm just saying he's going to give him a tough fight. Who gives him a tougher fight right now, Tony or?
Tony.
Okay, all right.
I think Tony is clearly the number two guy in that division, and we'll see how that
And by the way, I'm
out.
Not saying that Tony should surpass him, leapfrog him. I'm not saying
no,
that.
I'm not talking about rankings. I'm talking fighters.
Yeah.
Tony is number two and has established himself at that level. He could potentially be number one. I'd be interested to see how that fight goes, as everybody else in the entire universe would. But I'm not picking anybody to have a competitive fight with Khabib except for Tony at the moment.
Okay, so that's your hot take. Let me give you another hot take.
Hit me.
Okay,
you've got one? I'm ready.
Yes, I do have one. All right. And it has nothing to do with what we were just talking about.
Oh,
so
great.
We are, as of right this second, a little over 24 hours away from Jorge Masvidal and Nate Diaz. Mm. Or should I say Nathan Diaz, excuse me, facing off right here in this very building that I'm recording this, the South Street Seaport offices for the UFC, excuse me, for ESPN. The UFC press conference is going to be on the roof, and I've never been up there, but I'm told it's a very impressive spot. It can hold up to 3,000 people. They do concerts up there. So they're going to have their UFC 244 press conference there Thursday night. It's open to the public, by the way, 7 p.m. Eastern if you want to come check it out. Masvidal will be there. Diaz will be there. Dana White will be there. Here is my take on this. I'm very excited. I can't wait. It's been a while since we've really looked forward to a press conference like this, right? So I'm excited. Maybe since the Khabib Conor one from last October.
Yep.
I think this could be a dud, and I'll tell you why I think it could be a dud. They're both counter-strikers when it comes to these kinds of settings, these kinds of press conferences. The, you know, the great ones, right? Nate and Conor. It was great because Connor came out very aggressive, and Nate had the good one-liners after the fact. But both these guys like to sit back and wait to see what the other guy is going to say. But when you have two counter-strikers in a real fight, it's a bit of a stalemate. So I feel like because of the fact that they are counter-strikers, because of the fact that they are so respectful towards one another, I want everyone to curb their enthusiasm and just take a bit of a step back and say, this might not be the fireworks, quote-unquote, that we think it's going to be.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think there will be much crossfire. I don't think there will be much of them sniping at each other back and forth. But I do think these guys are such good quotes. They're such good guys on the mic that having them individually and allowing the press the opportunity to speak to them individually is still going to produce those moments for us. Anytime you stick a microphone in front of Jorge right now or Nate right now, it's been magic. Those post-fight press conferences after each of their win have been after each of their wins have been magic. So I agree with you. I don't think we will get them sniping at each other, but I do think the opportunity for both of them to be in front of fans one more time and the press to ask them questions is only going to be good. I'm high on the press conference and low on the possibility of them taking shots at each other. I agree with you. I don't think that's going to happen.
I think the best part will be the actual face-off.
Yep.
I'm still wondering, it's still a bit unclear whether or not an actual BMF title will be there.
That's right.
I will not be happy if one is there. Well, okay, look, I'll be happy if one of them brings one. I will not be happy if one is there
yes.
on the dais.
This is your number one
this
hot take.
This is my number one hot take. Why, you disagree?
I understand where you're coming from. I get it. I get that the belt would mean more if it was something that they brought a la Chael Sonnen, and you've referenced this, and I agree with you that that is one of the great moments in press conference history where Chael brought his own belt. But I think the UFC going off script here is something interesting and doesn't necessarily cross it over into trite or boring or corny territory. I like it for the moment. I could see down the line, if we overdo it, if this belt starts showing up everywhere, then it would probably cross into that territory. For now, I'm kind of lukewarm on it. I'm okay with it.
Listen, if you're Kamaru Usman in this particular weight class,
yeah,
like, I'm the champion. I'm the BMF. Like, what are you talking about?
Probably, if you're Kamaru Usman,
oh, don't
say
that.
You should probably come around, crash the press conference, bring your belt and let them know where the real BMF belt
is. But you know
lies.
What I'm saying? Like, historically, the champion
is the baddest.
Yeah. That's the way it's. Now, listen, this is amazing what Nate has done. Like, Nate has created this. Make no mistake about it.
Yeah.
This isn't Masvidal's
creation.
This is not the UFC's creation. He literally says in the cage, like, with this title now, he just created it out of nowhere. It's amazing. And the fact that everyone is behind it is amazing. The fact that we actually are talking about this, like, it's all thanks to him. He did this all on his own. I'm just saying, if I'm another fighter in this particular weight class, I'm like, wait a second, especially if I'm the champion, I'm the BMF. How are you guys going
to
nudge in there?
Good. Be
say
angry.
Something. Yeah.
Do something about
it. Well, and then when you add to that the UFC is actually getting behind this, I would feel slighted. Now, Kamaru has his own problems right now. You know, the title picture is just a total mess between him and Colby Covington. I mean, he's worried about that, I know. But if I was, you know, if I was someone on his team, if I was a little savvy, I would say, wait a second, guys. You're no BMF. I'm the BMF. I'm the one who beat the champ. I'm the champion.
Speak up.
Yeah.
Be angry about it. You know who has done this better than anybody? Is your favorite Triple C, Henry Cejudo?
He has.
He brings the medals.
Yeah.
He brings the intergender championship. This man has created so many titles that we're running out of them. He's quintuple C at this point. Get mad about it. If you're mad about them bequeathing this belt to Masvidal and Diaz, which I am not, I certainly think those are two bad boys. Get mad. I think that this is an opportunity, not a slight. This is an opportunity if you're Kamaru Usman, if you're Colby Covington, another person who is not a stranger to making up fake titles, his interim title having been stripped and continuing to parade that belt around. Take it as an offense and turn it into an opportunity.
Okay. Is TST giving you the rap sign over there? I don't know if you've heard, but I know you only listen to the show when you're on it or acknowledge it, but he's been running a very, very tight ship. I mean, it's almost like suffocating at this point. I can't even enjoy the show because I'm just looking at the clock.
Yeah, he opened the booth door and actually told me, he like physically grabbed me to get out of here.
So. And on top of that, he's adding all these ads to it. So it's like, okay, you're going to make my show shorter, but now I have to give up some real estate. I mean, it's really not fair.
I agree with you. I mean, This would never happen under my reign, I'll tell you that.
No. I'd step in and defend my honor, but I'd say we got to go.
Okay. New York Rick, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ariel.
Let me tell you about our good friends now from Dollar Shave Club. Are you really playing the intro? I mean, really? You can't think of a better song?
My fault. Here we go.
Oh, here we go. The guy runs a tight ship. Isn't this the same song as we just had for the last ad? There's no other songs in the library?
Just get to it. Come on. I mean, stop hating.
Golly. Anyway, Dollar Shave Club. Maybe next time we can look through the gazillion songs in the ESPN library and just pick two. I'm not saying pick 10. I'm just saying pick two. Anyway, Dollar Shave Club. They're great people. I love Dollar Shave Club. I use their products even when they're not sponsoring the show. I'm a huge fan. I think you know this about me by now. I only like to endorse the products that I'm actually a big fan of. I love these guys. It's a great product. Anyway, when I talk about Dollar Shave Club, I can't stress enough about the quality of their products. That's why I love them so much. I mean, I have sensitive skin, and when I shave, I get those bumps. Never happens when I use their products. They've spent years developing, crafting, refining everything that they put out. They have everything I use to look, feel, and smell my best. You name it, they have it, and I use it. It's true. I've been using them for probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. I know TST uses them as well. Is that true?
That is very true. I actually used it last night. I'm trying to impress the ladies nowadays, and I use Dollar Shave Club to help me out.
Do you use them on Screenless Saturday or on every other day?
They are allowed on Screenless Saturday. I don't know why I wouldn't be allowed to shave on Screenless Saturday.
I don't know.
Not allowed to shave.
I didn't know what the rules were. They've got the Executive Razor, which I know TST loves, Shave Butter, Prep Scrub, Dew. I love it. The quality, you feel great afterwards. And as amazing as their shave stuff is, Dollar Shave Club is way more than just razors. Dollar Shave Club has you covered head to toe. They have everything you need to shower, shave, style your hair, brush your teeth, and yes, even clean behind. Come on, this is a family show. Anyway, Dollar Shave Club can keep you automatically stocked up on the products you use. You get what you want whenever you need it, whether that's once a month or a few times a year. I never have to waste time at a store wondering if what I'm getting is any good. I don't have to wonder about any of that. As a Dollar Shave Club member, I know exactly what I'm getting, and it's the highest quality possible. So right now, you could put the quality of Dollar Shave Club's products to test. Their Ultimate Shave Starter Set has basically everything you need for an amazing shave. The Executive Razor, Shave Butter, Prep Scrub, and Post Shave Dew. The best part is you can try it for just $5. After that, the restock box ships regular size products at regular prices. Get your Ultimate Starter Set right now. Trust me, you will never go back to the other brands if you use these guys just once. For just $5 at dollarshaveclub.com/Helwani, H-E-L-W-A-N-I. That's dollarshaveclub.com/Helwani. I love these guys. I really do. Have I said that enough? And if TST loves them, you know, because he's such a TA, tight ship, you get it. If he likes them, that says a lot. All right, let's transition now to our last guest of the day. I'm looking forward to this one very much. You may have heard of James Wilkes from the past. If you're an MMA fan, James Wilkes, isn't that the guy who won the Ultimate Fighter Season 9, the UK versus USA season? Bisping, Hendo, isn't that the guy who beat Demaryius Johnson in the finale back in June of 2009? Well, yes, that is the guy. In case you may have forgotten, this is what it sounded like when he beat Demaryius Johnson back then.
Ladies and gentlemen, referee Steve Mazzagatti has called a stop to this contest at 4 minutes, 54 seconds of the very first round, declaring the winner by tap out. And now, this season's Ultimate Fighter, welterweight winner, James Lightning Wilkes!
Very happy. This is the best moment of my life for sure. Really appreciate the opportunity the UFC, Dana White, and Lorenzo Fertitta has given me.
So that was back in June of 2009. He beat Demaryius Johnson, then lost to Matt Brown a few months later, beat Peter Sabata, lost to Claude Patrick at UFC 120, and then unfortunately, shortly thereafter, had to retire. Had a couple of injuries, serious injuries, and had to stop fighting. And ever since then, it changed his life. And just this past week, the documentary that he produced, The Game Changers, on the benefits of a plant-based diet, especially for high-level athletes, executive produced by James Cameron, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jackie Chan, Lewis Hamilton, Novak Djokovic, and Chris Paul just came out. I watched it last night. It is fascinating. I am not a vegan myself, but now I'm starting to consider it. I got to be honest with you. It came out, and we're about to talk to him about it, but here is first a quick trailer of the film.
I ate a lot of meat. They showed us commercials.
Steak. That's what a man eats.
Selling that idea that real men eat meat. But you got to understand, that's marketing.
When I made the switch to a plant-based diet, I qualified for my third Olympic team. I broke two American records. I was like, man, I should have done this a long while ago.
When I went plant-based, I wasn't sure if I was going to survive. And I actually became like a machine.
I think this is going to wake a lot of people up.
Today's blood and yesterday's blood.
Damn. We all want to feel great, have more energy.
Most guys my age can't keep up with the grandchildren. My grandchildren can't keep up with me.
Someone asked me, how could you get as strong as an ox without eating any meat? And my answer was, have you ever seen an ox eating meat?
So that's a trailer of the new film, The Game Changers, produced by former UFC fighter James Wilkes. And he's now kind enough to join us via the phone. James, how are you?
Awesome, Ariel. I'm really excited to be on. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to talk to you again. It has been a while. So for those that may have forgotten, because you know how MMA fans may be these days, you fought 10 years ago. A lot has happened since then. Why did you retire so abruptly from the sport?
Well, I actually retired. So there's a couple of things. You know, we talk about one of my injuries in the documentary itself. But then later on, I actually had another injury. I'd actually broken my neck earlier on. And that got worse and worse. And just basically, I was asked to medically retire by four specialists. I actually kept thinking that, you know, the next specialist would say it was okay. But it was actually my neck in the end, and an old injury that forced me to retire.
And so in the film, like you're, as I mentioned at the top of the show, you are the principal character. The whole film, you're the host of the documentary, if you will. It's all through your eyes and ears. And you do a phenomenal job, by the way, as far as your narration is concerned, your interviewing skills. It's really cool to see you transition to this role. It starts off essentially with you talking about the injury, the knee injury that you suffered. And you said that you were actually sparring against a future heavyweight champion. Who was that man?
That was Fabricio Werdum.
Wow. So what happened?
I didn't want to name him in the film. Yeah, so... you know, I was sparring in Huntington Beach at a couple of weeks before a fight. It was supposed to be against Amir Sadollah, I think it was. And basically, I was just sparring. I hadn't really trained at that gym only a couple of times before. And I was sparring with Werdum, and he was getting a little bit mad at me because I kept tagging him, and he wasn't able to hit me. So, you know, heavyweights are just bigger and stronger, but they're not usually as fast, right? And so at one point, just something changed in his eyes, and he just went full on. Just storming at me, and then he did a flying knee, took me off my feet, hit me in the sternum, took me off my feet. I landed in some sweat. My feet slipped sideways, and the sweat stopped. And we were supposed to just be kickboxing, but unfortunately, he sort of sprawled, so all of his weight and all of my weight went into my knees, and both of them tore, unfortunately.
Wow. And so that essentially was the impetus for this documentary, right?
Yeah, I thought, well, I knew I was going to have about 6 months where I really couldn't train. Was really bummed out. So I thought, what can I do to spend my time productively? And thought, well, I could look into nutrition for optimal recovery and performance. So I started to do a deep dive on that.
Okay, and what did you find out?
Well, one of the early studies I came across was about the Roman gladiators. So scientists analyzed the bones and could tell that they were eating almost exclusively, if not completely, plants. There was 68 full gladiator skeletons, over 5,000 bones in Ephesus, Turkey, the only known burial site of gladiators in the world. And that just shocked me because I thought, well, you've got to have meat and animal products for protein. You know, I remember not long before that walking into a restaurant and the chicken was spelt funny. And I said, well, why is the chicken spelt like that? It said it's made from plants. You know, and I kept asking, well, what, you know, do you have eggs? They said, no, this is a vegan restaurant. And so I literally walked out, would never have eaten at a restaurant like that because I thought you had to have meat and animal protein at every meal.
And so when you're fighting and throughout your career, when you suffer this injury, you're eating meat, correct?
Totally. Typical sort of athlete diet. I was like extra lean turkey, chicken, brown rice, broccoli, that sort of thing. You know, occasionally beef as well. And then at one point I did go to sort of grass-fed beef, air-chilled, you know, free-range chicken, more of a bit of a paleo kick before this. But when I came across this study, I really started digging into plant-based nutrition to see if it was really legitimate.
And so how do you go from that and reading about that to then making a film about it? What are the steps in between?
Yeah, so I started really digging into the research and started gradually coming off of animal foods, incorporating more plant foods, started feeling better, started realizing there was actually a lot of athletes performing at this level. Like at the time, two of the top 10 heavyweight boxers in the world were completely vegan. So that's 20% of the top 10, yet only 1% of the population was vegan. So I thought, well, there's something going on here. You know, there's people. And when I talked to them, some of them didn't want to talk about it because they felt it was their advantage, if you will. So I woke up at 2 a.m, just woke up. I hate being lied to, and I felt like I've been lied to my whole life. First of all, my parents, not lying, but, you know, just misinformed, telling me I had to eat meat to be strong and healthy. And then all of these adverts from the meat industry. And then what I later found out was biased research, the infiltration of the meat industry into the scientific research, paying honorariums and speaking fees and researchers to put out false and misleading statements and studies. And I just really felt mad that I'd been lied to. And I felt like I had to share that message with the world and put the facts out there.
Okay. So, I mean, I've worked in production before. It's great to be motivated. It's great to have an idea, but it's really hard to put together a documentary. It's not, you know, it's not as easy as waking up and saying like, I'm going to do this and get it financed. You have some heavy hitters behind this as far as executive producers are concerned. I just mentioned it. How do you actually get into the industry and get this off the ground? And how long, like, when did you actually start, you know, getting that ball in motion?
Yeah. So, I mean, it took a long, long time, as you can tell. So I bought a used camera off of Craigslist. I called Everett Motter, who was the director of photography on The Ultimate Fighter at the time, asked him what camera to buy and how to do the three-point lighting. Went on YouTube, learned a little bit of stuff, and started. And I literally bought that camera, started documenting it a little bit. You know, and it took some time, obviously. I knew that might not turn into a documentary. Maybe I just put something online. But I could at least use that footage to get other people interested. And so 2012, 2013, I started raising some funds with the other producer, Joseph Pace, who came on board. And we basically just, you know, pushed really hard to get the best people involved, what's now become arguably the best documentary team ever assembled, not only the executive producers that you mentioned, but also Luis Cejuelos, the director, who has the most award-winning documentary of all time under his belt, two-time Eddie winner. Dan Sweetlick, which is the best award you can get for editors, the music supervisor from former music supervisor from ESPN, actually. And so we just put this team together, and it took a long time, but, you know, finally it's out.
Had you ever produced anything before as far as films, shows, anything like that before?
Nothing. No, nothing before. Just, you know, set my mind on it. Just like, you know, just like I think my background in martial arts, it gives you that tenacity to compete and push and drive hard and keep pushing and keep pushing. And so the same thing with The Ultimate Fighter, right? Setting out a goal and just really going for it. I did the same thing with this documentary. And, you know, very early on, we thought, well, this would be ideal. We get Arnold Schwarzenegger in it because we know that he is telling people to cut down on meat. We get James Cameron to be an executive producer. Every single thing that we set out to accomplish, we were very fortunate to be able to put this whole team together and accomplish it.
And I think MMA fans in particular will be interested in this doc because a lot of them are interested in nutrition, but also because it is produced by you. You're a big player in the documentary as well. But there's a constant theme throughout, which is the Nate Diaz Conor McGregor fight, and especially the first one where Conor is talking about having steak for breakfast and lunch and dinner and trying to add that muscle. And then you have, you know, Nate who's saying eat your veggies and is a plant-based athlete, a vegan, very proud of it. And so what do you say to people who say like, okay, like I understand what you're trying to say. I understand that it's healthier. I understand that there's benefits, but why do I need to cut it all out? Like, why is this a detriment to me? Why should I go all in on this as opposed to just having a little more of a balanced diet?
Totally. Well, first of all, actually, I don't think it's necessary for people to go all in. So although that we only interview the actual interviews in the film, the athletes are completely plant-based, right? So anytime that you see an interview, not Arnold. Arnold actually hasn't gone 100%. He's advocating for cutting down on meat consumption. He's cut down 80% and he's doing better. You know, even Nick and Nate, we don't put an interview with them in the film. They're not 100% vegan. Like, I think they occasionally eat a little bit of seafood. So what we're advocating for is a plant-based diet. We're not trying to tell people to go vegan or vegetarian. In fact, there's a lot of data showing that the more you shift into a plant-based direction, the better you get. Certainly, I'm 100% plant-based because I do think it's better for your health. It's better for your athletic performance. But any shift you can make in that direction is going to be beneficial.
And could you tell us from a health standpoint, from an actual just feeling standpoint, like why do you feel it is better to go 100%? Why have you chosen that? Even though you're saying also you're not advocating to go 100%, but you have done that for yourself. Why?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think it's I advocate 100% for myself because I think the science is very clear on the health benefits and the performance benefits. So we understand now the biological mechanisms. There's inflammatory mediators in animal foods, which damage the arteries. There's something, the lining of the arteries is called the endothelium, and that produces something called nitric oxide, which is a vasodilator. And when you damage that, you inhibit the ability for it to produce that nitric oxide, which allows more, if you get lots of nitric oxide, you get more oxygen, more nutrients to the muscles. Your inflammation is reduced, you recover quicker, so you're just going to be a better athlete. And those same biological mechanisms that affect performance in the long term also affect your health. And indeed, inflammation is at the root of all of the common chronic diseases, heart disease, diabetes, cancer, the things that are killing, you know, the most people in the world. So I'd rather be all in because you just don't need animal foods. It's a package, right? Mm. All protein originates in plants. Animals are just the middlemen, and they're doing you a disservice. They're robbing the food of fiber and phytonutrients. They're adding in inflammatory components, and they're bioconcentrating pesticides and toxic heavy metals.
Do you still train in MMA martial arts?
Yeah, I still do quite a bit of jiu-jitsu. Because of my neck, I don't spar super, super heavy. But I still train people, you know, special forces, other military, law enforcement, you know, U.S. Marshals, LAPD, defensive tactics instructors, Navy SEALs, U.S. Marines, that type of thing. So I'm still, you know, very active.
And so the reason I ask that is you're obviously around a lot of fighters, a lot of tough people. Now that you are a lot more well-known for, you know, living this lifestyle and advocating for it and now being tied to this documentary, have you been able to convert anyone? Have you been able to open anyone's eyes? Anyone of note, people that we may know?
I'm trying to think now of more people locally, I think, that aren't well known. But you know, there's folks in Orange County that came up that I think trickled down, like Ashley Evans Smith, you know, is completely vegan, right, from Orange County.
Yep.
You know, so that, I think it is picking up in the UFC, but you know, I think my impact has been fairly local. But now that the film's coming out, I think that's changing, and certainly we're getting some super high profile athletes from other sports reaching out to us, asking for, you know, advice from our scientific team.
One of my favorite quotes from the documentary is the one that we had in the trailer there from the strongman. I apologize, I don't remember his name. The one with the big mutton chops. Yeah.
Patrick Baboumian. Yeah.
Yeah, and he says someone asked me, like, you know, how can you be strong as an ox and not eat meat? And he said, I've never seen an ox eat meat. And he's like, wow, that's actually a great quote, and that makes a lot of sense. What would you say to a fighter who's considering this, but, you know, it's like, I need the meat. I need the protein. I need all that stuff. I want to be a fighter. I want to go in there in a cage. How can I just be eating greens and all this plant-based stuff? What would you say to someone who's kind of on the fence?
I mean, well, first of all, I'd say watch the film because I guess
to
put it down into 90 minutes, right? So it's a lot to cover and a lot of research. And there's a lot more. And we've actually now put resources and more science and more facts on our website.
What's the website?
It's gamechangersmovie.com.
Okay.
So we put tons of resources for people that want to make the switch, like, you know, lots of recipes and tips on making the change and explaining that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. It can be what we call all or something, you know. So I think the main thing is this middleman argument about animals, that they are just the middleman. You basically want to get all your nutrients from the source. So the lower on the food chain, the better. You get less of these toxins. So if you take fish, for example, the mercury in the largest fish is up to 1 million times the amount of mercury per gram of the surrounding water, right? So you're just better off getting it at the base. So a lot of people eat fish for the omega-3s, DHA and EPA. Now, of course, you can take a fish oil capsule. People do that. But there was a study done showing that the 20 fish oil brands that show that they were toxin-free weren't, in fact, toxin-free and had the same amount of toxins. And these things can affect your hormones, which is terrible, especially for a fighter. You don't want to be messing with your testosterone. And so you can get that. If you want to do that, you can get your omega-3s from a tablespoon of flaxseed every day that's ground up. Or if you feel like you want to get this preformed DHA and EPA, which is the long-chain omega-3s, you get it from an algae-based capsule instead of a fish oil capsule. So basically this premise of getting all of your nutrients from the original source and not getting the baggage and the crap that comes from the middleman, which is the animals. So I think that's key for people to understand.
My understanding is the film came out on Monday in theaters, but for one day only. A shout out, by the way, to my barber, Jacob, who told me on Tuesday that he went to the theater to watch it and was blown away and now is going fully plant-based. So you clearly struck a chord with him. But now that it has aired, Monday has come and gone, where can people actually see the documentary? And why was it just a one-day thing?
The one-day thing was just to go to get it out there. We actually wanted as many people as possible to be able to see it. So typically people don't go to the theater as much these days, and certainly not for documentaries.
Right.
So we wanted people that really heard about the film to have a place to go and watch it. We also did a 22-minute like bonus content after show with the James Cameron interview and lots of other stories. But we wanted to get it out to streaming as quickly as possible. And so people can now order it on iTunes, pre-order. And in fact, just today, it just overtook and became the number one pre-order on iTunes for October 1st and beat out Toy Story 4, which was pretty exciting.
Wow.
So October 1st, it is on iTunes and on a bunch of other platforms, what's called transactional VOD, so Amazon, Google Play, PlayStation, Vudu, that sort of thing. But right now, the best way is to pre-order it on iTunes to make sure you get it as soon as it's out on October 1st.
And then what happens now? Like, the doc is out, you're promoting, you're doing it, but like, what are you going to do with your life? Is this a lifelong journey for you? Are you going to do something else tied to this because it seems to be so well received? Where do you go from here?
Yeah, I mean, in the screenings and also since Monday, we've had, you know, tens of thousands of emails and messages. People, you know, want more information. So, you know, I want to give people the resources, right? 5 out of 6 people that go meat-free end up going back. Number one reason cited is actually social pressure, because people think that they're afraid of, like, you know, eating the sort of vegan or vegetarian diet and feeling wimpy, when the opposite is actually true. But the second reason is not having resources. So what we want to do is keep putting out information, maybe do weekends where people can come and train with the athletes, they can listen to the experts, an app, a book, continuing to putting out free resources on the website. We're going to be doing stuff on the, you know, the Facebook community page where people can ask our scientific team questions, ask the athletes questions. So just continuing to put out resources. And obviously I'm still occasionally teaching, you know, law enforcement and military and in hand-to-hand combat as well.
This is great stuff. Really, I can't recommend it enough. I'm so happy we reconnected, and I really want to congratulate you and everyone who worked on this documentary, because it's great, especially if you're into athletics and you may have some preconceived notions about plant-based. I don't know if I'm fully able to make the transition myself with 3 little kids, but I promise you I'm now thinking about it, and you have certainly opened my eyes to a lot of stuff. So congratulations to you, and it's great to see you thriving in life post-UFC.
No, thanks so much. And then again, like I said, doesn't have to be, it's not all or nothing. It can be all or something. Any shift we make towards more plant-based eating can be better for performance and better for our health.
Thank you for doing this, James. I know you guys are being hit up from all corners, but it was great to catch up with you, and I appreciate the time very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Ariel. Appreciate it.
All right, there he is, James Lightning Wilkes, Tough 9 winner, now documentary producer, a documentarian, if you will. It's a great doc. If you're just interested, I love documentaries. It's my favorite thing to watch. And then, you know, with the ties to MMA and the tie, you know, James, you know, you like to support the guys who made a name for themselves in this sport and doing things outside of the sport. It's really fascinating stuff. So it's called The Game Changers, and you heard it right there, how you can check it out. I do suggest checking it out when you get the chance. All right. Great stuff from James Wilkes. Great stuff from New York Rick. Great stuff from Danny Segura. UFC Mexico this weekend. I want to leave you with this. Can I leave them with this? TST? Can I leave them with the clip? You played the music too fast. Let's give a little promotion to our Monday show. Can I leave you with this quote from Jeremy Stevens? This is what he said to me on Monday about this fight against Yair Rodriguez in Mexico City. Take a listen.
My killer instinct, my passion, my savage dog, warrior type, Aztec spirit is still there, you know, and now I'm hungry. Now I'm coming off losses. My back's against the wall, and I'm coming against a young kid who thinks he's from a new era. Like, what the fuck are you going to show me or think that you're going to do to me that I haven't seen, bro? You know, I went and trained with the best. I am the best. I fought in the best. You know, you ain't going to show me shit. The only thing you're going to show is the world that you're going to be sleeping on the fucking canvas, and I can't wait to show it. I'm pissed off. I'm ready to go. I'm a lot smarter. I'm a lot better. And that's how I keep showing up. If you think I'm an old dog from an old era, well, ask yourself, how do I keep coming back and getting multiple knockouts with my multiple different limbs? You know, my mindset, my savageness, you know, my just aggression and willingness to just always adapt, overcome, and get fucking better and keep coming back and putting these young kids to sleep. And that's what's going to happen come Saturday night, and I can't wait. I'm ready to put on a show for everybody.
Tell me you're not excited now. Saturday, Yair, Stevens, Mexico City, ESPN Plus. Great stuff. That was from Monday's show. Check it out in case you missed it. Thank you very much, Danny Segura. Thank you very much, New York Rick. Thank you very much, James Wilkes. Appreciate you listening. Enjoy the fights. We'll talk next week.